Good morning. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. I'm Janine, and this is Get the Funk Out. Very excited to bring on my first guest, Dean John B. Gould. He's joining us from the School of Social Ecology right here at UCI. He's a distinguished scholar in justice policy, social change, and government reform who has held key positions in the U.S. Department of Justice and the National Science Foundation. He took over deanship on January 1st, 2022, and he's joining us now. Welcome, Dean.
Good morning. Great to be with you.
Thank you for taking the time. I'm really excited to have you on.
Well, I'm delighted to be here.
I actually had a chance to meet you in person at Minding Your Mental Health, the Innovative Resources for OC's Mental Health Crisis with Professor Schiffman and Marshall Moncrief from Mind OC. But I want to back up and talk about how you became interested in social ecology.
Well, I think the first thing is probably to explain what social ecology is, because we like to say it's the school that no one kind of knows exactly what it is at first. Mm-hmm. It's the one where I get the question of the school of social what? And it really is a unique school because it's one that focuses on solving problems in addition to studying them. And these are problems that vex society. So all we need to do is look at a poll that UCI recently did of residents of Orange County to ask them, what are the biggest problems facing the county right now? So they were affordable housing or homelessness, mm-hmm. traffic and transportation, crime was up there, mental health was up there. And these are issues, I should say also climate and sustainability.
Sure.
These were all issues that our school works on. And we do it in an interdisciplinary way, and we do it in a way that connects with the community, with policymakers and practitioners. And that's what excited me about coming here. What was really the best part of being here is that we really take all the best minds of thinking about these problems, researching them, and then working in partnerships with policymakers, practitioners, business leaders, community leaders to try to tackle these problems and make progress.
Yeah. And I want to add that from the work I've done and my writing and research, that when you have people get involved, especially students, on purpose-driven initiatives, it boosts mental health.
It does, and it gives people a sense of, the word we use is agency. It gives them a sense that they have some control, they have some ability to affect the world, and that makes everyone feel more hopeful, more optimistic, and does help with anxiety and depression, too.
What is your experience as far as students and mental health on campus? Like, what have you heard or seen as far as mental health?
So I don't think we can kind of look at the students as being different than society as a whole right now.
Sure.
We know that from the pandemic, people have had greater problems with mental health. People have felt isolated. They have felt anxious. They have felt depressed. Now, that tie on top of that, growing trends we've seen over the last several years of youth expressing more depression and more anxiety
mm-hmm.
for a variety of reasons. They bring all of that to campus, and I think what we have the opportunity to do here, perhaps more than at other institutions, is we can do more wraparound services. So we have the ability to help them understand some of it in a classroom setting. We have an opportunity to provide counseling to them one-on-one. We have an opportunity for them to talk about it and help advance solutions for their peers through things, for example, our WISE initiative, which is the Wellness Initiative in Social Ecology that puts centers on campus that actually now is putting them in the community as well. So we're deeply focused on this problem because the students are the tip of the iceberg.
Explain that a little bit.
When I'm out in the community talking to business leaders, and I say to them, what are some of your biggest challenges right now? It is always about staff, always. That's the number one issue.
Sure.
How do you bring them back from a pandemic? How do you support them? How do you help them with some of the mental health issues that they are dealing with right now? And so this is certainly not simply an issue about students. This is an issue about society as a whole. I was talking to a friend of mine recently who was talking about problems that he was having with his middle schooler. And he was saying to me, you know, what we need right now is we need a mental health corps. We need a mental health corps like we have a Peace Corps around the world. We need a mental health corps right now. And I'm really pleased that my school is taking the lead on things like that. So we have a new clinical PhD program in psychology where we are going to be training the leaders in psychology in terms of the best treatments and research to be done. But there's so much more that needs to be done in the community, even with so many high-quality programs and organizations out there. We don't yet have the resources, and we don't yet have the personnel to attack it.
Right. I have been fortunate to have some field study interns and from the School of Social Psychology, and they
are fantastic. Well, we'd love to hear that.
They are fantastic. This is a separate aside from the work I do. And, for instance, this Thursday, one of them is going out to pick up bagels that I pick up every week at Einstein here in Irvine, and I donate them to various shelters. And I've been doing this during the pandemic because I realized there was all this excess food that was being tossed. And so I form relationships with businesses. But I share this with you because a lot of the students have said, oh, I would love to do this. I would love to get involved. I want to connect and do something meaningful.
So first of all, thank you for doing what you're doing, and thank you as well for using our students. I think for some of your listeners who may not know what our field study program is, what we require of all of our students is that one quarter while they are with us, they need to go out and work with a nonprofit, a government agency, a business to test these ideas that they learn in the classroom against practice. It's not just an internship where, hey, go do 100 hours of service. They're in an organization getting a real feel for it, and then they're coming back to a classroom where an instructor is helping them to debrief and make sense of all of this with their classmates. So it's really an unbelievable opportunity that we have here. And what you're saying about our students is absolutely spot on. So what we have in our school that is a little bit different than the rest of, certainly other UCs, is we have a student body that not only looks like the California of today, it looks like the California of tomorrow. So my student body, my undergraduates here in our School of Social Ecology, they are 64% non-white, 46% Latino, Latina. They are 51% first-generation college attendees. They are also 50% Pell eligible, which means they come from working class or lower backgrounds. They are incredibly talented, and what they tell us is exactly what they've told you. They've come here because they want the training to go out and be change makers. They want to go back into their communities and help advance positive change to address some of those problems I was talking about at the beginning.
Yes.
And when you see them and their commitment and their backgrounds and their energy and their intelligence, it is impossible not to be moved and not to be excited and not to want to help to support them. So you asked me when we began the conversation, why is it I wanted to come here? That's one piece of this. A student body that really reflects inclusive excellence and commitment to positive change, that you don't find at a lot of places.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I will say this for people listening that right now it's really important to be very compassionate and be a good listener when it comes to interacting with students. And I've noticed that one of the most important things for me, having field study students, is that I give them an opportunity for personal growth. So sure, I want them to help grow my business. But first and foremost, I want them to have an experience where if they feel socially isolated, if they feel they don't have friends, if they want to do something meaningful, they're having those experiences. That, to me, is so important because I feel that they will give back to other people as they get older and they thrive.
They will, and they haven't had as many opportunities over the last several years. So there's a group of students who help advise me, some of our student leaders, and we were meeting last week, and one of the things that they really were hammering home was just how much of their formative years, given the pandemic, were spent in virtual relationships with people because they had to be online. And that, I think, has been somewhat problematic because what we all want is connection.
Yes.
And it is so much easier to have that when you're one-on-one with people. So some of what we're having to teach students these days, which we never had to do because we didn't have the pandemic, is how to actually engage one-on-one with your peers, with your faculty, with others in the community, because they missed several years of that experience.
Sure. Okay, I have to back up because you said something which really grabbed me. You said you have a team of students that advised you. Could you tell me about that?
Sure. So it's the Dean's Advisory Council. This is a group of our student leaders in the school. There are about seven of them.
Mm-hmm.
We meet once a quarter to talk about what's the feel of the place, how are students feeling, what are some of the things that they are interested in, what kinds of things might we do to better meet their needs. It's a really interesting group, and one of the things I love the most about them is that they don't hold back. They'll tell me exactly what's on their mind.
Fantastic. I love that because you're really tapping into their needs.
Yes, and it's funny. One of the things that they said is we need more opportunities just to engage with our peers and with faculty one-on-one without there being an agenda. So what they're basically saying is they're hungering for connection, and they want structured connection because it's still a little awkward to know how to just kind of ring someone up. Well, that would be the old way, but to use text a faculty member, say, hey, could I come talk to you? They need ways of being able to have those interactions that don't feel as awkward to them as they're worried about.
Absolutely. I know, because I remember being a student, and I was hesitant to go to my teacher. My dad used to always say, you know, ask for help, and I was so hesitant. And then when you get over that hurdle or you talk to some friends that feel the same way and you start connecting one-on-one, it makes a huge difference.
It does, and we always say to the students, first of all, go see your faculty out of class. There's something called office hours, which is faculty need to be in their office a certain number of hours each week simply to take student questions. And here, students often will go, but at other institutions I've been at, faculty are sitting there waiting for students to come see them. So we say to students, that's the best way to personalize your education, is to go have a one-on-one conversation with your faculty. But you need to do other things, too. And actually, we just did something a couple weeks ago based on the recommendation of that advisory group of students. We did something that we called 5 for 10. So what that meant was the students picked 5 faculty members from across our school that they wanted to hear talk for 10 minutes about a topic of the students' choosing. So for some of the faculty members, it was about their research. For other faculty members, it was about how they got from where they are to where they are today. And we had the largest turnout we've had in 4 years or so among
Fantastic.
Students for this event. And it was basically like a TED Talk, except it went for 10 minutes each
mm-hmm.
faculty member. It was a terrific turnout. The students were cheering. There was engagement with the faculty afterwards. And it's back to what you were saying. Those are the kinds of touch points where students get an opportunity to engage with one another, to engage with a mentor, and have fun doing it, too.
Absolutely. And mentoring is so important. What would you say for a student that feels like they do need a mentor here at on campus?
So the easiest thing to do, well, actually, there are two things. There are three things. So the easiest thing to do is simply to go to office hours of a faculty member they kind of like.
Mm-hmm.
Our faculty are some of the most approachable, engaging people I have dealt with in more than 25 years in academe. And if a student comes into a faculty member and simply says, hi, the faculty member will take the conversation from there. So that's certainly one way to do it.
Okay.
We also have our WISE initiative, again, the Wellness Initiative in Social Ecology, where students can go to these meetings, these centers, and simply say, you know, I'm looking for a little extra attention, a little extra help, and their peers will help direct them. And then on top of that, we have a student advising center where we have both peer and professional advisors who are there to help provide that kind of mentoring to the students. So we really do have a number of services kind of wrap around, as I said earlier, to really help our students find their place here.
Fantastic. Tell me about the books you've written. You've written quite a few books.
So I like to say that on a good day, I'm a Renaissance man. On a bad day, I'm a dilettante. I've written on a variety of things. I've written on hate speech. I've written on how to succeed in college. I've written on, we did a study of defense lawyers who represent death penalty cases. Most recently, I edited a book on evidence-based solutions for criminal justice. I have varied interests, and I guess what I like to say is that I work on things that are interesting, and then I move on to the next thing that is interesting. But what ties them all together is, again, I think this concept of what our school's about, and really what brought me here, was the ability to be, as our faculty say here, the ability to be relevant, to be able to be engaged in trying to improve the world. Now, I know that sounds like, you know, I'm running for some sort of, beauty contest. but it's true here. And this goes across the spectrum, left to right. The people in this school want to improve the quality of life for others. That can be, as we talked about before, mental health.
Sure.
It can be about threats to the coast. It can be about improving the criminal justice system. But that's what we're all about, and frankly, I like to think that's kind of what my books are about, too.
That's fantastic. So I also read some fun facts about you. You have been to all 50 states, more than 55 countries. You're working on your pilot's license, and you're once a ski patroller.
Yes. So let's just say when I was younger, I was able to do more things. As you get older, there's the body makes it a little more difficult to do some things. I still ski. Been skiing since I've been six, so let's just say that's several decades. In terms of the pilot's license, it's on the long plan right now.
Okay.
My hope had been to come out here and pick it up again. It's going to take a little while as I get more time under my belt in this job. But for anyone who has been up in a small plane, or anyone who's thinking about it, I should say, it is nowhere near as scary as people may think it is. And when you think about the superpowers that you might want, some people want to be able to have X-ray vision. Others want to be able to travel in time.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone who says they'd like to fly like an eagle, being in a small plane is basically the equivalent of it.
I would imagine. I want to thank you so much for joining us. Is there anything else you'd like to leave us with?
I think, again, this is a place that's trying to make a difference, and we are looking for partners to help us make the difference. So if your listeners out there hear this and say, wow, I want to learn more, we have an event on April 26th where we are celebrating our school's anniversary. We have multiple of them. We're picking them all and doing it then, and we are calling the event the School of Social What? Because when I say social ecology, most people answer what the first time they hear that. We are going to be celebrating what our school is about, and we welcome anyone from the community to join us then. It'll be up on our website. And we also look for partners, for people who hear what I'm talking about and think, you know what? I want to be part of that, too. We would welcome anyone who wanted to partner with us.
Fantastic. Dean, thank you. I've really enjoyed getting to know you. I really appreciate this. If you miss any part of my conversation with Dean John B. Gould, it'll be up on the show blog within an hour after I wrap. And the blog is getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Have a great day. If you want to find out more about Dean Gould, all the information about him is on the show blog. Again, getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org. And the podcast will be up within about an hour or so. Also, you can also Google him. There's all kinds of information. There was a wonderful event, as I mentioned, a couple of weeks ago I attended. If you go to socialecology.uci.edu, Minding Your Mental Health, with Professor Jason Schiffman and Marshall Moncrief, CEO of MindOC, and the dean spoke there as well. I'm Janine. This is KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. We're going to take a little break, and then I'll be back with veteran journalist, cable news political analyst, and human rights activist Goldie Taylor.